listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM. You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional engineer, professional futurist, and sometimes occasional sessional instructor of future studies at Simon Fraser University. And this is a weekly show that looks at future trends and issues and important items that affect your daily life and will be affecting your life into the future. Welcome to the show. We're continuing our examination of the state of the environment, a series that we began on Earth Day. In 1980, I organized the first Canadian Earth Day, and coming up to 37 years later, I am now examining how far we've come and what is the situation, the lay of the land with the environment. Have we progressed a great deal in the last 37 years? It's important to say that when it comes to the environment, costs are important. We should compare the costs and benefits of environmental investments in the same way that we compare investments in all other important areas of human endeavors. In other words, we have to do a cost-benefit analysis of everything that we're proposing. It's important to stress that being overly optimistic about the environment is not without costs, but also it should be stressed that being too pessimistic also carries a hefty price tag. And we're going to be looking at that today. Of course, we cannot simply choose to believe in the future, but the documentation and arguments that we've made in this series can have considerable effects because they can free us of our unproductive worries. They can give us new faith in the fact that we are involved in creating a better world by taking part in society's productive assets, tangible as well as intangible. It is possible to encounter the same considerations when it is often pointed out that things have only gone as well as they have because we have, in fact, worried about them. No, things have gone so well because we have worked hard to improve our situation, not just simply sat around and worried about them. That's what the whole essence of Earth Day originally was conceived as, people taking action for the environment, not just worrying about it. So the first thing that I did for Earth Day was simply pick up a garbage bag and go pick up garbage along the highway. In other words, action. Not just sitting around meeting with people and worrying about the environment and complaining. Action is what matters here. In some circumstances, this has happened almost automatically, as in the continued growth of economic wealth. In the last 37 years, we've become significantly richer, primarily because of our fundamental organization in a market economy, and not because we've sit around conference tables and worried. Some of the most significant recent progress in the area of pollution has been achieved through regulation. But the regulation has been right to the extent that it represented a reasonable prioritization, and not because it was founded on general worry. More food is available in the world today, not because we've sat around conference tables and worried about it, but because a significant number of visionary individuals and organizations created what is now called the Green Revolution. It is not because we have worried that we have more leisure time now, greater safety, higher incomes, better education. but because visionary people have tackled these problems head on. They have not flinched at the responsibility of taking on these problems. We must all take care of these problems, prioritize reasonably, and not worry unduly. We are actually leaving the world a better place than when we got it. And this is the really fantastic point about the real state of the world, that mankind's lot has vastly improved in every significant measurable field, and that is likely continue to do so. Think about it. When would you prefer to have been born? Many people are still stuck with the environmental theories and have a mental image of children growing up with a shortage of food and water and with pollution, acid rain, and global warming. However, these images, to a large extent, are a mixture of our own prejudices and lack of proper analysis. So this is the very message of these radio programs. Children born today in both the industrialized world and in developing countries will live longer and healthier. They will get more food, better education, and higher standards of living, more leisure time, and far more possibilities and potentials without the global environment being destroyed. And that is a beautiful world. So things are not perfect, but they're not as bad as some people say they are. Let's look at a case study, one that is on everyone's mind. Genetically modified foods, or GMOs, GMFs. And this is an encapsulation of environmental theory. This is an environmental controversy that has been brewing for many, many years. And the question of genetically modified, or GM foods, or as their opponents have called them, Frankenfoods, has been a very big issue for many years. In many ways, the discussion tends to be a replay of the environmental theory versus actual real world evidence, as described in these radio shows. However, unlike most of the other issues, this debate has in no way been concluded, and consequently, the analysis of the GM issue is necessarily must rely on a more detailed examination of concrete examples. On this show, we'll talk about genetic modifications used not in medical production, but in agriculture, since this is where most of the controversy has been centered. From 1996 to 2000, the area of GM production has steadily increased from 1.7 million hectares to 44.2 million hectares, or an increase from 0.1% to 2.9% of the global crop area. Four nations grow almost all the GM crops, with the U.S. growing about 30 million hectares, or 17% of the crop total, Argentina growing 37%, Canada about 7%, and China about 0.5%. Nonetheless, by now, all six continents grow GM crops commercially. The four top GM crops are soybeans, corn, cotton, and canola, or also known as rapeseed, with a total estimated value exceeding $3 billion. The promise of GM foods is huge, but so are its potential problems. So let's look at both so we can do a proper cost-benefit analysis of the GM issue. First of all, let's look at the benefits. GM foods will contribute, possibly greatly, to the world's food supply. Computer models indicate that over the next couple of decades, food prices will decline by almost 20% more due to GM foods than they would otherwise. Therefore, of course, the cost of delaying GM foods for just a decade are prices that would have fallen by this percentage less, hurting the poor around the world. There are possibilities of countering malnutrition by increasing the nutritional value of staple foods. A typical example is the golden rice issue, which will supply extra vitamin A, which could help combat the millions of cases of blindness and other diseases stemming from vitamin A deficiency. Though such an approach is not itself total, will not totally eradicate these deficiencies, simply reduce their incidence. For the industrialized world, GM crops can help reduce the need for intensive use of chemical fertilizers, the need for pesticides, herbicides, and fungicides. Whereas most present GM crops have features such as pesticide resistance, which may be interesting for the farmer but hardly for the consumer, the coming years will see far more useful products. In foods, we will see more nutritious cereals, potatoes that absorb less fat in frying, reduced calorie sugar beets, and oil seeds with more healthy reduced saturates. For non-food crops, we will see cotton and flax with improved fiber quality, better ingredients for personal hygiene, cottons that are naturally colored, so therefore the resulting textiles do not have to be dyed, saving enormous quantities of reducing pollution and reducing investment required to produce colored fabrics, and flowers with stronger color and longer vase life. Yet for all these promises, there is a marked difference in the consumer perception of GMs, and in the European Union and the United States. In the European Union, 60% of all consumers now view GM foods as risky, and consistent majorities reject their usefulness and find them morally unacceptable and to be discouraged. To this, the credit should go to the very powerful green parties throughout the European Union that have waged a nonstop, very expensive campaign against genetically modified foods of all types. In the United States, 60% are positive about this food biotechnology. And in a survey of consumer food safety concerns, genetically modified foods came in last after biological contamination, pesticides, nutritional quality, artificial preservatives. The difference is often ascribed to the bad European experiences with food safety. For example, bacteriologically contaminated meats and dioxins that had made their way into poultry, pork, beef, chickens, eggs, and Belgium chocolate, which have created incredible fear in the European consumers of contaminated food. Moreover, both the European Union and the United States have been seen eroding trust in GM foods over the past years. This coincides with the global mobilization against GM foods that has been led by international non-government organizations such as Greenpeace and Friends of the Earth. Owing to the very dispersed and network-oriented opposition, there's no single source that will encapsulate all worries. Yet the primary two concerns from Friends of the Earth have been at the center of the GM controversy and are replicated in many other lists. These two issues are health concerns and environmental concerns. The health concern is further related to the GM foods possibly being both toxic and allergenic, in other words, promoting allergic reactions in people. These three concerns have each been backed primarily with a widely publicized story. We will look at each of these stories and see that all three seem to have been severely skewed by their proponents. Health issues. Allegedly toxic potatoes. On August 10, 1998, Dr. Arpad Pusztai appeared on Granada's TV show World in Action and declared that GM potatoes had stunted growth and suppressed immunity in rats that had eaten them for 110 days straight. These findings, Dr. Pusztai said, raised grave questions about the safety of GM foods for humans, and personally, he would not eat GM foods. Naturally, the statements made a splash. They immediately prompted members of the House of Commons to urge a moratorium or even an outright ban on GM foods. Dr. Pusztai was suspended from the Rowett Research Institute, which in an audit report concluded that the existing data do not support any suggestion that GM potatoes have any effect on growth, any effect on organ development, or any impact on immune function in rats or any other animals. This caused 20 independent scientists, shocked by the harsh treatment of Pusztai by the Rowett Institute, to review the data and publish a memorandum, finding that the GM potatoes were different from the control potatoes and that the reduction in growth in immune functions was real. The Royal Society in 1999 published its own review of GM potato data, finding that the study was flawed, and thus the data reviewed provided no reliable or convincing evidence of adverse or beneficial effects, for that matter. In other words, the potatoes, the GM potatoes, were identical to the non-GM potatoes in terms of the impact on the consumer. Finally, Dr. Putztai published his findings in The Lancet in 1999. Now the data did not show changes in growth or immune function, but variable effects on different parts of the rat's gastrointestinal tract, or GI, which could have been caused by the genetic modification. Notice the words could have, may have, not did. In the same issue of Lancet, three other researchers again found that the experiments were incomplete and did not allow a conclusion on the risks of GM foods. The entire course of events naturally left the public wondering whether the truth was being distorted by the government or by the biotech industry. And with the story of Putztai, non-government organizations have claimed that we have all become involuntary guinea pigs in a vast genetic experiment. It is important to point out that what this study did actually say, originally Putztai had used a potato line genetically modified with a gene coding for lichen from the common snowdrop. Such lichens are widely known to be toxic. In fact, another lichen, namely ricin, was the poison used on the umbrella tip to kill Bulgarian dissident Georgi Markov in 1978. Consequently, it was no surprise that potatoes expressing this lichen equally could cause damage to growth, organs, and the immune system. Even Putztai acknowledges that the lichens cause primary damage. As Ian Cubitt, chief executive of Axis Genetics in Oxford, pointed out, everyone knows that lichens are toxic. So if you put this in a potato and it ends up being toxic, why is that such a surprise? This quote is actually made the central argument of one of the co-authors of the memorandum. Thus, the potato is toxic, but that is due to the choice of a toxic gene, not the GM technology. However, this is what the new Putztai argument. The experiments also revealed effects on the small intestine that did not come from the GNA, but also occurred in the GM potato. Yes, the potato was toxic, but the genetic modification could also have caused other effects. Notice that these effects were not consistent. Rather sometimes good, rather sometimes bad. The code word here is that could. The problem with the Putztai experiment was that the GM and the non-GM potatoes were so different. They even had very different contents of starch and protein. Thus, what could be a difference between the GM and non-GM could also just be a difference attributable to natural variations in the potato lines. Actually, since the GM potato had less protein, the rats had to be fed protein supplements, and this supplement could equally well explain the differences. These problems were, to a large part, the reason why the Putztai experiment got such statistical criticism. Naturally, making a new line of, say, potatoes can result in unrecognized and unwanted characteristics. This has happened many times before in conventional breeding, whereas we have had no knowledge of such occurrences in commercial GM crops. Moreover, the National Academy of Sciences, in their latest GM report, notes that such bad crops would probably be more likely to come out of conventional breeding. Thus, it was concluded that the GM potato was not toxic. The subtle effects were probably have been produced by natural variation, and this variation might actually have been a bigger problem than for conventional breeding. But note, until the Putztai experiment had been repeated many times, it would not be possible to know this for sure. You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby, and you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, Instructor of Future Studies at Simon Fraser University. We're now going to take a short break and listen to a very important public service announcement.
With thousands of homeless animals Entering SPCA shelters each year, pet overpopulation is a serious problem in BC, but it's one you can help prevent. Spay or neuter your companion animal today. From our perspective, every homeless animal on our streets or in our shelters is one too many. For more information on spaying and neutering initiatives, visit the BC SPCA website at www.spca.bc.ca.
Welcome back. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenari, professional futurist. Welcome back. We're comparing GM foods with non-GM foods. Is there really an issue here? Health. Allergenic beans. This is how the Organic Consumers Organization puts the worry over allergenic beans. In 1996, a major GE food disaster was narrowly averted when Nebraska researchers learned that a Brazil nut gene spliced onto soybeans could induce potentially fatal allergies in people sensitive to Brazil nuts. Almost all of those concerned about GM foods mentioned this story. Friends of the Earth asked us, will we know what is in our food and if we're allergic to it? However, the story is actually one of a fairly well-functioning food system. Back in the 1980s, a small biotech firm in California wanted to help combat third-world malnutrition, focusing on the health problems of a diet predominantly based on beans. While beans are generally nutritious, they lack two crucial sulfur-containing amino acids, methionine and cysteine. Only the other hand, nuts, and especially the Brazil nut, store the high concentrations of these two amino acids. Thus, the thinking was that if one took these genes for these two amino acids and spliced it into the beans, this could, at low or no cost, eradicate their potential health problems. Yet before the actual GM beans had even been made, the scientists themselves pointed out the folly of transferring a gene from a known allergic source into a major crop, and the project was abandoned. Later, the work was revived by Pioneer Hybrid. This time, the idea was not meant for humans, but to improve soya-based animal feeds. Ordinarily, these foods are supplemented with an amino acid, which can be converted into cysteine to promote optimal growth, but naturally, it would be cheaper to have sulfur-containing amino acids built in naturally. During this work, Pioneer themselves conducted allergenicity studies, since it has not previously been conclusively shown that the particular Brazil nut gene was responsible for the allergic response. When it turned out it was, Pioneer killed the project and, to their credit, published the results. Thus, it would seem that the Brazil nut case was a demonstration of a food system that actually worked, not one that was out to make people sick. As it was pointed out in a recent review of the British Medical Journal, the point that it usually not emphasized in the coverage of this case is that the problem was identified because of safety checks that were and continue to be in place to identify unintended introduction of an allergen into a genetically modified crop. This, however, does not mean that there's absolutely no risks. First, we rely on the food producer to act responsibly and to test, if necessary, withdraw the product, as we do with all other food production. Second, whereas testing is mandatory when using a known allergen, there are currently no clear procedures for using foods that are rarely allergenic or non-food organisms unknown allergisticity. These concerns are real, although about 90% of U.S. food allergies are caused by a few well-known substances, namely cow's milk, eggs, fish and shellfish, tree nuts, wheat, and legumes, all of which are tested extensively. Moreover, the FDA states that the new allergenic cases can happen for both GM and traditional breeding. Indeed, it is ironic that the fear of allergisticity should be an argument against GM foods, when in reality, the new technology offers a promising new way to breed out this undesirable trait from plants which produce allergens naturally. It also can be argued that GM foods have been killing butterflies. Of the many environmental worries, by far the most referred to is the fear that GM would harm the ecosystem, and especially the story that GM corn kills monarch butterflies. The GM corn to manufacture the so-called BT toxin family, which comes from the soil bacterium Bacillus thuringiensis. Because BT toxins, about 130 all, are naturally occurring, biodegradable and harmless to humans and non-target groups, they're extensively used by organic farmers. Actually, Rachel Carson, the one who wrote the book Silent Spring that started the environmental movement in the 60s, specifically suggested that BT sprays, along with biological control, would be a favored method for agriculture. One of the main pests for corn is the European corn borer, which in the United States can infest 75% of the total area and cause a crop loss of up to 20%. Large amounts of pesticide, around $20 to $30 million a year, are spent each year controlling this pest. But it is difficult since it spends so much of its life cycle inside the plant. BT is toxic to these insects, of which the European corn borer is one. Thus, it seems an obvious idea to try and incorporate the gene for BT toxin into the corn itself, making it impervious to the corn borer. And indeed, the GM corn has been very successful, being the second largest GM crop in the 2000s. In 1999, researchers from the Cornell University tried to assess the effect of GM corn on the monarch caterpillar. Milkweed is the only food monarch butterflies eat to survive. Since corn is pollinated by wind, the pollen also often lands on milkweed growing by cornfields. So the Cornell scientists dusted ordinary and BT corn pollen onto milkweed leaves in amounts that roughly reproduced the appearance of leaves around cornfields and fed it to the caterpillars in the lab. Almost half of the caterpillars eating the BT-sprinkled milkweed died after 4 days of feeding, whereas all the caterpillars consuming milkweed and ordinary corn pollen lived. This set off alarms. Although the monarch is not an endangered species, it was pointed out that half of all caterpillars hatch in the U.S. Corn Belt. And although the caterpillars need not get far away from the corn to avoid the GM pollen, one entomologist explained, if you're a monarch, odds are you're going to be close to a cornfield. Time magazine asked itself whether this new threat to the monarch could happen in cornfields across the Midwest. And Discovery claimed incorrectly that the monarchs had been poisoned irreversibly. A coalition of 60 environmental groups and organic farmers, with Greenpeace in front, even prepared to sue the EPA for failing to protect the monarch for approving GM-modified corn. And in Europe, the monarch story caused the European Commission to delay approval of GM corn from the company Pioneer. Now, in future shows, we're going to look at the effects of this. And we're going to show that the alarm was premature and unwarranted, and how environmental groups have amplified concerns to such a huge degree as to cause actual hysteria. Well, that was something we're going to look at in future shows. And so please stay tuned for one more show on the issues of how the environment has been impacted by the environmental movement. So please stay tuned. You have been listening to Future Talk on CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 cable FM in Burnaby. And Future Talk is a weekly show on important issues that affect you and your future. And this is Dr. Teneri, professional futurist, reminding you that if you're not willing to make the effort to invent your own future, then others will be only too happy to invent it for you. See you next week.